that there is a concept of kfiyah beget, that the Gemara certainly mentions it by some cases, and that there is a machlokas how and why it works, and that that machlokas is highly consequential. So we spoke for a while about the Rambam's position, which seems to be that the mitzvah motivates it, or the mitzvah at least addresses the issue that the get should not be considered ma'usa, should not be considered forced, because the inner pintel yid, as we've been calling it, wants to do the mitzvah. And we saw that some of the Rishonim don't seem to be working off that premise, and we saw yesterday that a number of Rishonim are probably working off the premise of Afke'inu, that the rabbis of the Talmud dismantled the marriage internally, and that creates either that the marriage itself really doesn't need a get, and the get is just to accomplish something else. Practically speaking, we do need a get, as we emphasize, but the question what the nature of the get is, Shaul was asking about this yesterday, I was actually discussing this with the Shefa today, he was working off the assumption that according to that opinion, the get is the Rabbanan, and we discussed the possibility that it could be the get is still min ha-Torah. As I mentioned yesterday, in terms of the question, it doesn't necessarily mean that if it's the Rabbanan, that Heter Mei Rabbanan will offset it. That's really internal to the issue of the Cheder Ben Gershon, which we'll get to. But that's kind of an open question, whether the need for a get under these circumstances is deraisa or derabanan, but it's clear that a get is necessary. But one of the major, major differences that emerges from what the mechanism is here is that if one assumes that it's the mitzvah that is the operative element, so then that gives us a wider berth, because we can find the mitzvah much more easily. And we have Chachamim who have the ability, so to speak, to create a mitzvah by commanding it. So the Chachamim in every generation can command the get to be given, and they feel that that's the appropriate response, and that will create the mitzvah l'shmoa divrei Chachamim. However, the other Rishonim don't seem to necessarily feel that's the case, and seem to feel that it's Afke'inu that is at play here. So Afke'inu is going to be a little bit more limited, or a lot more limited. There's only going to be the cases where the Chachmei HaTalmud asserted it. And that's also going to, therefore, going to be applied in a very narrow sense, or a much more narrow sense than the mitzvah type of svar. So that was essentially where we had left off yesterday. So getting now into the practical questions, which are going to take us a while, because a lot of them are just the practical questions of what fits into the category, it's a very serious issue, because if there is kfiya outside of the rules, if the kfiya is not justified by halacha, so then the get is no good, and that's terrible. That's essentially remarrying without the get, with all the consequences that can be attached to that. So it's very important to know whether the kfiya is justified or not. And it sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch, like we have a more narrow range of what can be subject to kfiya. And for the most part, Poskim today will work off the assumption that the first step is to try to figure out that the case in front of us is covered by one of the existing cases in the Gemara. And then it would be subject to the existing Afke'inu in order to justify kfiya. I discovered something kind of interesting. I was discussing with the Willigan or Shechter, trying to figure out what the practical attitude towards this is. Quite fascinating. So in the Sefer, Eilu Shekofa Lahotzi, he quotes from the Tshuva Zakan Aram. It's a well-known Sefer Zakan Aram, but Rav Aaron Walkin, this is not the one, it's a different one, Zakan Aram Halevi. But he quotes from that Sefer that if the couple is not living together anymore, so that itself should justify kfiya, which is a very significant finish, because that would address, you know, pretty much all of our situations that we have today, all of the Orah cases that come up. Pretty much always you're dealing with a situation where they're not living together. And if that's the case, if this position is true, that it triggers kfiya right away, that has pretty significant ramifications. So this is not a position that's widely known in Psak. Again, this Sefer is not quoted from such well-known sources. Rav Nosson Gishtetner has a tshuva where he quotes a similar idea from Rav Chaim Pelagi. Rav Chaim Pelagi was a very well-known machaber of many, many svarim. So he writes in one place that if there is a tension between the husband and wife, there's a fight that it's clear the Beis Din can assess that there's just no hope for this marriage, there's no chance it's ever going to come back together again. He talks about giving it 18 months, and then under those circumstances, they should be kofa again. So Rav Nosson Gishtetner, in his Chuvus Laharuz Nosson, so he said that's very surprising because he thinks that that would be a get the Musa. That's not part of the kfiya that we have that's listed in the Gemara. So how do you know that you have a right to make such an assessment? So it happens to be that Shechter Shlita happens to agree with the Zakan Aaron, at least conceptually. I didn't quote the Zakan Aaron, but from his own opinion, that he feels that this is true, that essentially if the couple is not living together, so then that should justify kfiya on the surface. Now, again, part of the question is figuring out what do the categories in the Gemara mean. Right, so if the Gemara talks about, for example, if the husband has a terrible breath, so the assumption is the wife can't be expected to endure such a thing, so couldn't that be extrapolated to other circumstances? So you have to figure out what exactly is included within that. So, for example, if he has a condition which is not constant, even if it's very difficult to live with, but it goes up and down, so then one might argue, as some Rishonim do, that that's not clearly included in such a case, because the Gemara is talking about a situation that's constant, and maybe someone that's not constant, maybe someone might decide that they can live with the highs and the lows, they can live with the good moments and the bad moments. But here, the assumption that Rav Shechter and others are making is that if there's no marriage at all, if they're not living together, so there's no benefit of marriage whatsoever, so then that really should be included. It should be, even according to the Machmirin, that that really should be included in what the Gemara is talking about, that that's not a marriage at all. It's certainly worse than it's assuming it's certainly worse than what's listed in the Mishnah. And therefore, Psak of Kfiya would be appropriate theoretically. So emphasize theoretically for a couple of reasons. First of all, clearly there will be many poskim who would disagree with that. And this is a situation where you need a certain degree of consensus because you're talking about people being able to marry each other, you're talking about communal concerns that affect the whole world, so you have to work off of a system that has as much consensus as possible. So whether or not that means you should act on kfiya, even if we feel that kfiya is justified when others may disagree, that's going to be one major question. The other major issue, which is very relevant to the current controversy in terms of the trial going on, right now I think it's still going on, so Shechter assumes, in addition to that, that we basically can't do kfiya in America because of Dina de Malchusa Dina. Now that's a complex point because you have to figure out exactly what does that mean. What does that mean to say that Dina de Malchusa Dina gets in the way of our kfiya? So it means that if the Dina Malchus Dina prohibits the kfiya that we're talking about, so that could apply, I think, just to flesh this out a little bit, in one of two ways. One is, let's say you're asking the government to do the kfiya. Right? You're asking the government to be the instrument of the kfiya. So that runs into issues sometimes of church and state separation. So church and state, that's the point that Rav Shechter was focusing on perhaps most directly. So Dina de Malchusa Dina, in general, we have a principle that you have to follow the law of the land. That's Dina de Malchusa Dina. And that regulates all kinds of behaviors. So what about between two Jews? Let's say monetary law. So you have civil law and you have Chosh Mish, but they might be different. So if you have a transaction between two Jews, maybe we should say that they should follow Shulchan Aruch and not the Dina de Malchusa Dina. So that is often true, but we have to figure out what kind of Dina de Malchusa Dina we have. So if we're talking about Dina de Malchusa Dina, which is an institution for the good of society, like for example, he talks often about rent control, so that there is a law in America sometimes that apartments have to follow a certain policy of when they can raise the rent and when they can't. So there were those in the time of Rav Henkin was the Gadol Hador in America before Moshe Feinstein. So there were those who felt that the Jewish landlords felt that if they had Jewish tenants, they didn't have to follow rent control laws, they could charge them as much as they want because they follow Shulchan Aruch, and not the Dina de Malchus de Dina. So Rav Henkin said, no, it's not true, because this is a policy on behalf of the whole society. The society is protected by rent control. So that applies to everybody, applies to the Jews also. So too, we have a policy in America called freedom of religion. And that's crucial. We wouldn't be able to practice our religion if we didn't have freedom of religion. So we believe very strongly in freedom of religion as a principle. So therefore, that means that the Dina de Malchus Adina effectively prohibits kfiyah. But just practically, what does that mean? I mean, in terms of the Dina de Malchus Adina part, so on the one hand, it means government kfiyah. It means that if you're going to have the government getting involved in religious matters, so that's takana on behalf of society that has to remain true across the board. Or if we're talking about actions that are themselves crimes, such as kidnapping, such as beating people up, such as anything in between. So if you're talking about actions that are themselves crimes, so then again, that's subject to Dina de Malchus Adina, and therefore we're not permitted to engage in that kind of fear. So that's going to be a big practical difference. So again, just to recap, so following Rav Schechter's somewhat unique view on the idea that kfiyah could be justified in circumstances that are broader than what other postmen would acknowledge, it's a largely theoretical point for two reasons. One, because you want to do as consensus position as possible because of the ramifications. And two, because Dina de Malchus Adina may prohibit a lot of what is considered kfiyah. However, it doesn't necessarily prohibit everything that's considered kfiyah. So we'll have to talk about what is called kfiyah and what isn't. There could be things which are not illegal, but may still be considered kfiyah by at least some poskim. And just to talk theoretically, let's say, for example, throwing someone out of shul. So is that considered kfiyah or not? So that we'll have to discuss. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But that's not illegal. Presumably a rabbi has the right to decide who can daven in the shul and who can't. So presumably the government's not going to prohibit that. So that might be an example of something which is not subject to Dina de Malchus Adina, but might be considered kfiyah. So then it's important for us to figure out whether or not kfiyah is justified or not. However, even in America. However, again, it's important to keep emphasizing this, that a lot of what we see in our communities in terms of rallies and the like, we are not assuming that that enters into kfiyah. It's not working off the premise that kfiyah is justified in those circumstances. But we'll say more about that. Hi.
We mentioned that Rav Schechter would say that we would follow Dina de Malchus Adina and not Choshen Mishpat, let's say, when it comes to social policy or well-run society.
Right.
So, like, rent control or something like that. So right. We would ignore the halacha. Well, let's say, so in that case, even if it conflicted against Din and Choshen Mishpat?
Yeah, basically saying, well, yes and no, because even if it conflicts, in this case, it's not really a conflict, because the halacha recognizes that there's an Ikar HaDin and there's also communal institutions, that there are, you know, takanos hashuk, that all times, all kinds of contexts of society can make a new rule that will override the Ikar HaDin. So here we're saying that the government's law also enters into that category. It's not just that the Rabbanim got together and decided this will be the policy, but that the government, New York City government, made the rule. It's also a binding. So just to explain the point again, so you might say, okay, so you have a landlord and a tenant, two Jewish people, so what regulates the behavior between them? So strictly speaking, it should be Shulchan Aruch. So rent control isn't in Shulchan Aruch, but rent control is an institution on behalf of society which benefits all society. So we assume that that does fall into the category of Dina de Malchus Adina and would be relevant there also. I think Ryan was up first.
So if you said that there's a mitzvah involved, so mm-hmm. It's not only that, I mean, it's not like communal policy or like there's makers in and there's the Tekanos HaShuk, but if there's a mitzvah involved to force to give a get. So, you know, if the government said you can't eat matzah on the first day of Pesach, you'd say, well, let's eat matzah. So why is that a case of the...
You may say that should be something that's outside the realm of the government. Right, but here, what they're saying here is that they're saying that, so we begin to break it down into two parts, that if you're going to say that it's about church and state separation, church and state separation. So that's policy overall, which is what allows the mitzvah to be performed. So even if it has a specific overlap, which is complicated, but the rule in general is necessary for the religion to exist, so presumably we would prioritize that. And also here you're saying, so if the halacha was the Assyria that you have to beat a person up, so why should the government be allowed to stop that? So that's also a function of the Dina Malchusa Dina that's necessary for all society to function. That hitting people becomes the prohibition of hitting people is a prohibition. The prohibition of assault and battery is one that's necessary for the well-being of society, and therefore that becomes an existing rule. And so it's not something that we have the right to override. So,
it's a question on the kosher mishpat. What you said. Even if it is something that's set by society, wouldn't the Medina Bavona kick in at that point? So if somebody decides to not rent control their apartment, but the non-Jewish landlord down the street is doing it, doesn't that, if that's, wouldn't that automatically make any sort of...
The market makes the...
Yeah, if that's a law, wouldn't that automatically change the market, in which case now... the question doesn't even get off the ground, because it's always a question.
That's an interesting question. I'd say it gets off the ground because it's still simpler, but that's an interesting approach. And you know, say that now the market for the apartment becomes different. You have to also figure out how enough figures into real estate, which is a little bit more complicated. Right? We say normally in on null carcos, most of you showing them assuming that there is a prohibition, which doesn't have the same consequences. But part of it goes to do with the question that it's hard to figure out what exactly the market is in real estate. So there are questions and interesting ones to explore. What exactly is so null by spirit? It's an interesting question to have all kinds of details to try to figure out, but it's definitely worth exploring. Rent control is actually our topic. We spend more time on that. Okay, so this is a major question, figuring out what is included in the cases of the Gemara, that even if we assume that we're not passing like the Rambam, we're passing like the Shulchan Aruch and the Rush and others who are more machmir on this, but maybe the cases in the Gemara can be interpreted to include other types of situations, and maybe even such a situation of people who are not living together anymore, which is a major, major issue, because that would address 98 or 99 or 100% of all the cases that come to our public attention. And it's very, very rare that you're dealing with a recalcitrant daguna situation where they're still living in the same house. It's also relevant because we'll talk about eventually the prenup, which we recommend for everyone. But the prenup, to whatever extent there is a room to argue about whether it's considered a method of kfir or not, that'll be one of the major questions. So if one does follow this opinion, that if a couple's not living together, then kfir is permitted anyway. So the prenup only kicks in when the couple's not living together. So that would be very helpful to settling any objections that come from the kfir issue, if that would be the case. So we'll have to talk about that a little bit more. So now, just in a few minutes, just to dip our toes into this major issue of Moas Alai. So we have the cases in the Gemara, and the Gemara also tells us about the concept of Moas Alai. But what does the Gemara tell us about Moas Alai? So that is a major, major machlokas harishonin, and a major machlokas lahalacha. So just to get a little bit of exposure to it, and we'll, so tomorrow is the Chumash day, and Sunday we'll talk about something else, so we'll talk about this more on Monday. But just to get a little bit of exposure to the idea, so the Gemara on Daf Samach Gimel, the recent Daf Yomi, and Daf Yomi is going to get back to our subject soon also, so again, it's a great time to join in the Daf Yomi world. But the Gemara on Samach Gimel Amud Aleph talks about Moredes, right? A woman who is rebelling against the marriage. And again, I think it's also important to keep in mind, and it also says something about the level of equality that's existed in Jewish law long before it was popular in the rest of the world, that Moredes means she's rebelling against the marriage, and not against the husband specifically, just like we have the other concept as well, that the concept, it's a very important concept to underline, that this concept of rebellion, of being Mored, works in both directions, because she can be rebellious and he can be rebellious. They both have a status of rebellious that could be attached to them, so it's not to suggest that one is secondary to the other, that one is a servant to the other, that the concept of Morid applies in both directions. And therefore, so for example, the Gemara asks about that. So the Mishnah on Samach Gimel Amud Aleph talks about what should be the consequence of Meredes, that she loses out on her ksuba, she loses out incrementally, depending on how long it goes for. And then the machlokas in the Mishnah, does it mean just until the ksuba is used up, or could it even be that she could lose more than her ksuba, and that she theoretically could end up in the negative if she inherits any money she'll owe it? So that's one possibility. And you see that in the same Mishnah, the Mishnah says, V'chein ha-morid al-ishto. It's also possible for the husband to have the same kind of status, that he is also rebelling, and therefore he'll end up having to add to the ksuba. So the Gemara asks, first the Gemara here on Samach Yom Amar Aleph, asks, Moredes Mimai, what exactly are we rebelling from? So Rav Huna Amar Mitashish Amita, Rav Yosef Rav Chanina Amar Mimalach. So one opinion says that it's from having a physical relationship, again in both directions, and the other says that it's from Malacha. So the Gemara asks, well there, especially because in both directions, so we have to figure out, so Tashmash we understand. So the Tnan, the Chen Hamorid Al Ishto, since we know it applies in both directions. So Bish, Lamalamanda Amr Mitashmish, Lechayoy. Okay, so Tashmish we know that there's an obligation in both directions. So either spouse could be considered rebellious in that sense. But Elamanda Amr Mulacha Mim Shibba, so is he obligated to do Mulacha for her? So yeah, he is the obligated supporter in, but Omer Ain Yizon Vein Mefarnes. So, okay, but that should undermine things right away. But if that's really the case, then we're going to tell him he has to divorce her anyway. So yeah, you don't have to talk about it, so that's what we're talking about here. So then the Gemara on Samach Gimel and Beis, so the whole passage. By now you've seen the Gemara, pretty much. So the Gemara over here in Samach Gimel and Beis asks here towards the bottom of the page, so hechi damya meredes. So what exactly are we talking about when we talk about this rebellious act? And what it seems to be is that there's two types. So amra meimar da amra v'inale mitzainale. That one possibility is she says, I want this marriage, I just want to annoy him, I want to hurt him. It's a very unhealthy relationship. But maybe that's what's going on. That maybe that's one status. Aval amra ma'isalai lo katinun. But if she says, by contrast, not that I want him, but I want to hurt him, but I can't stand him, I'm disgusted by him, so then lo kaifinun la. We don't force her. So what does that mean? What do those words mean, lo kaifinun la? That's the $64,000 question, right? So Arye, what do you...
Rashi says... she goes without. We don't even do the poches on the ksuba until she agrees to finally do the things that she's supposed to do. We just let her go without a.
Right. So it sounds like from Rashi that there is a whole process that we go through with the worst kind of rebellion, where we make it clear that she is rebellious, and we're going to reduce from her ksuba, and we're going to make public announcements, and we're also going to give it a year just in case things get better. So if that's the case, so says Rashi, no, val amra moisalai, lo hu v'lo ksubasa v'ina, I don't want him, I don't want his soup, I don't want anything. So lo kaifina la, here's the ikar, lehashosa. Hello, no sin lo get, v'yotza v'lo ksuba. So we don't force them to stay together here, but rather we give the get, and no ksuba, and it's over. But Tosus, if you had a chance to see the long Tosus, so Rabbeinu Tam does not understand it like that. And it could mean the opposite, or it could end up the opposite, but it could mean something very different. The question of whether or not we are going to compel a get in these circumstances. So this is a major machlokas rishonim, which we'll have to say a lot more about, a major, major machlokas in Psak. So just by now, I assume you've had a chance to see, we'll read it together. I brought my fancy schmancy programs, right? So I thought I did. So if you look at the Rambam, right, by now I hope you've seen the Rambam. It's the language of the Rambam in Hilchos Yishus in Perek Yudalit Halacha Ches is Haisha Shamana Baila Mikashma Shamita Pia Nikra Meredes. Right, so that's the translation of what we just saw on Samach Gimel Meredes. That a woman who holds back Tashmish it is considered to be Moredes. So then what happens? Shaul and Osab mipnei ma marda. So we ask her, why is this? That, why have you decided to hold back? What's the reason? Im amra mastihu ve'eni yecholo mi boilo mi daiti. So let's say she says, I'm doing this because I'm disgusted by him. I'm totally repulsed by him. So then what happens? So says the Rambam, kofin osol l'shaita l'garsha. Then we compel him to divorce her. Why? L'fi she'ena kishvuya she'tibal sanula. That she is not like a prisoner. She's not like a captive. That she's obligated to have relations with somebody who she hates. So therefore, we compel him to divorce. The teitzei below ksuba klal. So then she leaves, the marriage is over, but there's no ksuba, but tito below sechayamin, she takes her clothes, bemin yachas and shechnisa lebal, mischayav acharusim, menechsem buluk, shorin chayav acharusim. So she takes what she came in with, ve'en atalos b'shal balaklum, but she doesn't take anything from him. All right, etc., etc. He goes on to focus on that. So that's the position of the Rambam, that if she says, ma'at salai, if she's not interested in living with him, so then we compel him to divorce. So this is also a very, very significant issue, because this also very broadly expands the circumstances that are subject to kfiya. Because if that's the case, so then essentially it would seem like almost everything is open to kfiya, because the wife can say, listen, I'm disgusted by him, and that's going to do it. So then that will essentially trigger kfiya. So the question is that true? So first of all, that's only assuming that the Rambam is the dominant psak here, and you have to figure out if that's really the case. Also, you have to figure out if what I just said is true. Is it true that as long as she says Moisa Lai, that's enough? Or does there have to be some substance to it? So, as you may have seen, we'll discuss this a little bit more, that some assume that even those who allow kfiya for Moisa Lai mean that it's Moisa Lai with some type of an explanation, some type of an amasalos. She has to give some credible explanation as to why this is not a livable marriage. The Rama also mentions that requirement, although in that case it's not clear that he's saying that if it's there, there will be then grounds for kfiya, but that is enough just for her not to live with him anymore. And then she can explain that it's an unlivable situation, so then we don't force her to live with him, but it's not clear as far as what the situation will be with the get. Now it seems like the Shulchan Aruch is generally assumed to not paskin like the Rambam, because if you read the Shulchan Aruch in Evan Ezer and Ayin Zayin Beis, so what's the language there? The language is a little more complicated. So it says, Aisha Shemona Baila Mitashnish, Pia Nikreis Moredes. Okay, so far so good. Vishol Rosam Ipneim Amarda. So we ask her, why is it that you're not interested? Im Amra Mastihu Veni Yacholi Baala Midaiti. So now he throws in a parenthesis here, which is not in parentheses, but he throws in an insertion, which complicates the sentence a little bit. Vidavka Shmivakesha's Gepalo Ksuba. And we're talking about a case where she's not asking for the ksuba, she just wants out, but she's not asking for money. But if she says she wants to get and the ksuba, then we're worried that she just wants kind of a no-fault exit and to get all the stuff. That maybe she decides she's interested in somebody else, so she just wants a quick exit, so then that's not the appropriate path. So that's, we'll assume that she's just asking for the get without the ksuba. So that's going to be a different story. And he finishes off this point by saying that if she did not look at somebody else, she didn't decide she knew somebody else, that's considered to be the worst type of rebellion, where she just says, I just want to hurt him. Has that been? But assuming that it's a mastihu alai, mais alai, so then, what's the din? So what does the Shulchan Aruch say? It seems different than the Rambam. Im ratza habal v'garsha, ein lo ksuba klal, etc., etc. And then the Shulchan Aruch goes through a very long description of what she gets to take and what she doesn't get to take. So it sounds like that there isn't kfiya for the get under those circumstances. So that becomes a very major issue. We'll have to figure out exactly how we patskin on this issue, because essentially we see now that the Rambam in two different ways significantly expands what's considered to be subject to kfiyah by get. First by saying it's based on the mitzvah, which would presumably allow a much broader range of what's included, and also saying that it's up to the woman to decide that she's repulsed, and that allows triggering kfiyah as well, which would be a different story. Shechter told me that with Kapach, the was said about him, or said by him, I don't remember, that he really, Paschim like the Rambam, that he really felt that the Moed Salah is enough, but because the rest of the poskim don't really accept this, so he would always look for another basis for kfiyah, and he'd always find one. There'd always be another basis for kfiyah. So I mentioned that he's entitled to the Kapach was a Temani, so the Yemenites follow the
everything
follow Rambam and everything, right? So you could say, okay, across the board, everything the Rambam said, they follow. So maybe he's entitled. But the question is whether the couple he was dealing with, whether they also have Temani, it's maybe going to complicate things a little bit, but that also highlights the fact, again, we're talking about an issue where we need communal consensus because everything affects everybody else. So if it was just about his own personal behavior, so we could more clearly say, okay, I follow the Rambam and everything. But it gets a little more complicated because of the nature of the intertwining and the communal concerns that we're talking about. Okay, so a lot more to say about this, including we also have to talk about the possible Takanas HaGaonim that we alluded to yesterday. And how does that factor in? So we'll have to fill all that in as well. So just to quickly review just these last points I spoke about in the last few minutes. So we talked about whether we can expand the cases in the Gemara or not, or just use Dimui Milsa and Milsa to try to figure out what else could be included in these cases. It's a very serious question, because if it's not going to be justifiable kriya, it's going to be a get Musa. So we found that there were some achronim, and the Shechter agreeing with them, that if the couple's not living together, so then that also justifies kriya, which would be huge because it would address almost all of our recalcitrant situations. But that's still more theoretical than practical for two reasons. One, because again, we're looking for a consensus for the most part. And two, because Shechter L'Shitaso was pointing out that kriya is limited by Dinat Malchus Adina, which we expanded on a little bit in terms of two contexts. One, in terms of freedom of religion, in terms of what the government's going to get involved in. And two, in terms of activities that are themselves illegal, so that would also be governed by Dinat Malchus Adina. And again, Shechter pointed out that if that's the case, that it's a method that is prohibited by Dinat Malchus Adina, he assumed that that would be a get Mausa, that would be a subject to the disqualifying impact of how the get is being given. We haven't yet gotten into the issue of what the Shulchan Aruch talks about the differences between Al Yidei Akum, Al Yidei Bezdin, and Commanding Akum. We haven't gotten to that issue yet. We'll have to say a little bit more about that as well. So then the major question also then becomes, including the category of Moed Salai. So the Gemara introduces the category of Moed Salai, but in a very unclear way, to distinguish between two different types of merit. And it's not 100% clear what the implications of one are of the other. We know that Bo'ina Mitzarle, that I was just trying to hurt him, that that's worse. But what exactly is the scale of what happens to one, what happens to the other, is not clear. The Gemara says, by Ma'isalei lo kaifinim la. So Rashi sounds like the Rambam. It means that we don't force her to stay around. We force him to give a get. That's also, it's not explicit in Rashi, by the way. See, Tosis makes it more explicit, right? Perish bekuntris lo kaifina lo la'amo tachtav elo yitain get v'yotza b'lo k'suba v'yesh meforshin de kofino so lahotzi. Right? But Tosis makes that position more explicit in Rashi, that what he's getting is that would be kfiyah, like the Rambam. And other Rishonim didn't necessarily accept that. We saw that the Shulchan Aruch doesn't seem to accept that. And how exactly all of that impacts on halacha l'maisa, we'll have to pick up with next week. And tomorrow we finally get to Parsha Shemini. We've been waiting for 3 weeks, so we finally get the opportunity to. I've had teasers now for a long time. We finally get to look at it inside.